You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our second of four podcasts on the emerging role of biologic treatments in the management of bullous pemphigoid, hosted by Med Learning Group. This series is geared towards dermatologists, primary care providers, geriatricians, and emergency medicine physicians to provide improved insight into the diagnosis and treatment of bullous pemphigoid. My name is Surabhi Dangi Garimella, and I'm your host for today's podcast. In this episode, our experts will highlight the diagnostic tools for bullous pemphigoid, keeping non-dermatology specialists in mind, and empower physicians to routinely integrate referral to a dermatologist into clinical practice. With that, it's my pleasure to introduce our program chair, Dr. Victoria Wirth, and our guest expert, Dr. Michael Passerstein. Welcome, Dr. Wirth and Dr. Passerstein, and thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great to be here. I wanted to start with a case of an 80-year-old white female. She had a history of blisters and was seen in the ER and then admitted to a burn center where she was for 3 weeks. And she was put on a dose of prednisone of 40 milligrams a day and then tapered off. And then she got the rash back and more blisters. She got a second course of prednisone and then a same deal. She went back down on the prednisone, flared, and had to go back up on a third course. So the issue here is, first, what does she have when she went to the emergency room? And so we wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that she also was somewhat complicated because she had hypertension, she was anemic, and she had actually a history of sarcoid. And her medications included furosemide. And I will point out that furosemide has been associated with bullous pemphigoid. She's not on a gliptin, which can be associated also with drug-induced pemphigoid. And she came in also on some topical steroids, but relatively weak ones. So she was somebody who essentially had been diagnosed with pemphigoid, did not have a bullous pemphigoid ELISA test, and was still having problems because of the fact that she had been on and off prednisone really a lot of times. So at one point we put her on mycophenolate mofetil as a steroid sparing agent, and we were able to slowly begin to reduce her steroids. I do want to use this case as a springboard to talk a little bit more about bullous pemphigoid, and in particular, where is it commonly diagnosed? And so we're lucky today to have an expert in emergency room medicine who can tell us from an ER perspective what it's like to have one of these patients come into the emergency room. I will say, and we'll talk a little bit about how the patients get handled from there. So maybe we could just start with that. What happens when these patients come into the emergency room?
Thanks again for having me. And so in the previous episode, we talked about how some patients may present with diffuse itching, and they can be challenging to make a diagnosis. But I think that if a patient presents with a diffuse blistering rash that's on their trunks, on their trunk and extremities, and these tense blisters that are 1 centimeter to up to 10 centimeters in size, and especially if they don't have mucosal involvement, then hopefully we're thinking of bullous pemphigoid. And or at least a type of blistering rash that bullous pemphigoid would be on the differential. So if we are thinking of a rash such as bullous pemphigoid and we go through our evaluation, we are looking for blisters that arise from normal skin, or maybe they're arising from urticarial plaques. We're looking for these lesions in the intertriginous areas, flexural areas. The consideration would be, do we need any labs? Does this patient need to be admitted? Or of course, can they be discharged? We're always thinking about what is the disposition for our patients. So some considerations would be, how diffuse is this rash? How diffuse are the blisters? And what stage are these blisters in? Have they already erupted? Are they now ulcerating? And is this patient at risk of losing fluids? Are they at risk of losing electrolytes? And as well, they may even become protein deficient. So it's appropriate to send labs looking again for electrolytes, looking for their albumin level, and considering that they may in fact be hypovolemic. So some of these patients may need to be admitted to the hospital for further management. In addition, depending on the extent of these lesions, they may even have secondary infections. So we should be considering starting these patients on antibiotics.
That's, you know, highlighting a lot of the comorbidities that can be associated with these patients. And I think when they come into the emergency room, it is important to just decide, is this an autoimmune blistering disease? Is this like Stevens-Johnson? Is this TEN? Paradigms are going to be very different. Not every bullous pemphigoid patient needs to be admitted. Many of them can be started on prednisone, usually a dose of 0.5 milligrams per kilo per day. And the idea, and what I think the case exemplifies, is that you don't want to be tapering steroids if they're still making blisters and they're not healing, like 80% of their blisters are not healed. You really can't just give a week of prednisone and then stop. They will be worse and they'll be back in the emergency room. So I think it's important when they're in the ER, and if you're not going to admit them, which many of these patients don't need to be admitted, they can just be given prednisone, but it may not be the right dose. If it's really severe, you may have to go up to 0.75 milligrams per kilo per day, but then there needs to be really careful follow-up. And the reason for this is twofold. One is the medicine working? And number two, to make sure that, for instance, they're not becoming diabetic, that they're not getting hyperglycemic to a degree that could be a significant problem for the patient. How's their blood pressure doing? So I think one of the most important things is to arrange for really excellent follow-up and also to be seen by a dermatologist to confirm the diagnosis with really several different tests. And one of them is a biopsy for routine pathology, where you can see the subepidermal blister, often with eosinophils and other inflammatory cells. We also do a direct immunofluorescence from perilesional skin to look for antibodies that bind to the basement membrane zone. And these antibodies are the ones that can be also detected in the blood. And they're called the bullous pemphigoid antigen. There are two of them. And their molecular weight is a BP180 and a BP230. But these antibodies can be found, the IgG antibodies can be found at the basement membrane in the skin on a direct immunofluorescence. The other thing that can be done is you can actually find circulating antibodies in the blood that can bind to normal skin, and you can detect them that way. It's called an indirect immunofluorescence. And then also the other thing that we frequently do now is an ELISA test to look for these specific antibodies, the bullous pemphigoid antibodies in the blood. And this is available at just about any lab. It can be sent out from the ER, it can be sent out from the primary's office, but it's really nice to document. And it's something that we sometimes will follow to make sure that it's coming down with treatment.
I'm really glad that you brought up a lot of these tests, but to be honest, I'm not sure that most emergency medicine clinicians are going to be ordering many, if any, of those without first talking to a dermatologist. Certainly the serum test, the BP180 and the BP230 definitely are not on my top thing that I think of to order. In fact, I really cannot remember the last time I ordered those tests. So I think in an ideal scenario, we can talk with a dermatologist and get their perspective, get their recommendation on serum tests that we can offer from the emergency department. But I also recognize that there are many places where people work where they might not have dermatologists available. I know in my previous position, we just did not have a dermatologist available for me to call. So I could call another hospital system to try to speak with a dermatologist that might be available, but they have no duty to really respond and give any recommendations. So I think from the emergency medicine perspective, we might not be able to send a test, or it might not be readily recognizable that there's a test to send. And the best thing that we can do is arrange for close follow-up.
Right. And I think that makes perfect sense. And since the ER is, you know, it's the disposition's important. And if the patient has a primary care physician and their patient's getting put on prednisone, seeing them in a short period of time after the ER visit would be really important to make sure that, you know, they're not diabetic, that they're not hypertensive, and also assuring that they can get in to see dermatology in order to get the definitive testing to make sure we have the right diagnosis.
Yeah, I think it's very common that we'll start someone on prednisone from the emergency department, maybe for 5 days, 7 days. But it would be pretty unusual to start someone on prednisone for much longer than that at the dosing that these patients require. So it's so important to ensure that they have appropriate follow-up, because as this case exemplifies, if they're not on the appropriate amount of prednisone, then the lesions will return and we'll be right back to them presenting to the emergency department since they didn't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah, that all very good points. You know, there are a lot of challenges with diagnosis, and, you know, the idea of a delayed or misdiagnosis is certainly an issue as well. And it's very difficult. I mean, you know, bullous pemphigoid is not rare, but it's not that common either. And so being able to recognize it, and sometimes it has very unusual manifestations, meaning that it may look like urticaria, it may, it may be eczematous looking. And so it really requires, or just be itching, requires an index of suspicion, and then making sure that follow-up is done with derm and with primary care. And then the other question, of course, is, I think the itching and all the other forms of the bullous pemphigoid we just talked about, urticarial lesions, which, you know, they last. They don't go away in 24 hours. They come and they stay, and they're itchy. The other one would be the eczematous lesions. They can look exactly like eczema. And so it's, you know, heightened sense of what the differential may include. And so one question, it would be, what should trigger a referral to dermatology? So I'll throw that back to you.
I think in the obvious patient who has a disseminated blistering rash, we clearly want to get a dermatologist involved. Ideally, it would be while they're in the emergency department and can help manage or help give recommendations when your patient is still present. And maybe they'll even be able to come see the patient in the emergency department, although I fully recognize that most emergency medicine clinicians are not going to have that luxury. I think that anytime someone has a diffuse rash, we in emergency medicine start them on a treatment and then we'll give the recommendation for follow-up with the dermatologist. But in this situation, I think it's really important to make that phone call and close the loop and do our best to make that patient an appointment. This is the type of diagnosis where if the patient doesn't have the appropriate follow-up, then the initial treatment that we begin from the emergency department will really just not be sufficient, and they'll return back again as soon as the medicine is completed.
Yeah, I think that's a really good message. And, you know, we know about the challenges with access to specialists these days. And so very often it does require, like you said, a warm handoff, calling, contacting, and making sure that this can be done. I think that we have a lot of challenges ahead. But I think the really good news is overall that we are potentially going to have safer treatments, hopefully get a little bit fewer steroids that are needed by some patients, and then shorter duration of steroids as we improve on the targeted therapies that are coming down the pike. And so I think the other point is that from an ER perspective, if you're giving a dose of prednisone at 0.5 mg per kilo per day, the patients can really develop hyperglycemia quickly. Their hypertension can happen quickly. And so it's really a matter of also making sure the primaries are involved and following the patient. And we know about all these challenges now that are happening in terms of access to care. And so people really need to be their own advocates, but also the physicians that are seeing these patients in the ER really do need to reach out.
These patients often are hypertensive and diabetic at baseline. So for sure, when we start them on prednisone, especially for this extended course that they'll likely be on, we really do also need to ensure that they have close primary care follow-up.
Yeah, and often they'll be on medicines that could be triggers. And so that also requires working carefully with the patient seeing their primary care physician and being aware of the medications that can be triggers. And so these are all somewhat complicated, but important things to consider. And so I thank you very much for the discussion. This has been really helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wirth and Dr. Passerstein, for highlighting the diagnostic tools for bullous pemphigoid, some of the challenges associated with diagnosis, and making a dermatology referral. And thank you to all of you for listening. We hope you will join us on the remaining episodes of the series, where we will discuss the pros and cons of current and upcoming treatments for bullous pemphigoid. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. And thank you to our sponsors, Sanofi and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, for providing an educational grant for this activity. Have a wonderful day.